friends. It is Sunday, May 20th, 2012. This is Deanna Spingola in the first of what I'm going to call Spingola Specials, in which I interview people in a commercial-free environment. There's not going to be any bells or whistles. There's no, there's not a board op on duty. It's just going to be me and the guest. First of all, I want to give a little bit of background information on the swastika, something that we have all been indoctrinated to view as something very evil and, of course, associated with the so-called Nazi Holocaust. Jews complain about any use or display of the swastika as a reminder of atrocities. Jews absolutely hate the swastika and have used their money and influence to ban the use or display of the swastika in some countries. Jews point to Hitler and the so-called Holocaust as justification for the suppression and demonizing of free speech. Jewish hacks at the ADL and Southern Poverty Law Center brainwash the masses to believe that the swastika is a symbol of hate and German paganism. But the truth is, Jews object to the swastika because it is a symbol of their most hated enemy, Jesus Christ. Jews hate him, as demonstrated in the Talmud. The Jews have succeeded in suppressing one of the oldest Aryan Christian symbols by associating it with the alleged Nazi Holocaust. Alternatively, in 1822, the Rothschilds unveiled the Star of David, the hexagram symbol of Zionism, now the flag of the Israeli state, as their family emblem. There is no evidence in the Bible that shows any connection between this ancient occult image and King David. However, King Solomon, when he later adopted pagan gods and occult practices, used that image. My guest today is ZCF, which stands for Zion Crime Factory. His website is zioncrimefactory.com. Welcome, Z.
I'm glad to be here, Deanna. Well, I'm glad you approached me with this idea because it seems to be a good way to get information out. A lot of people don't like to read these days, so audio is a good format to spread the information that we all talk about.
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes we just don't get a chance to talk about some of the real in-depth things on my regular radio program. So you've got a lot of really interesting things on your website. Again, that is zioncrimefactory.com. And up at the top, you have a swastika. And that is why I gave the information about the swastika, because I want people to kind of understand its background. Because the minute people will go to your site, they might be put off by this emblem.
I originally didn't have a swastika on my site when I first put it up last year, but I started to do more research into the World War II era and the National Socialist Germany era, and started to realize that the lies that we've been told about the Second World War, the Holocaust, and Hitler need to be destroyed, need to be demolished, because this is the lifeblood of Jewish power. It is the lifeblood of Jewish rule in the Western world, particularly. So I decided the swastika represents truth. It represents honor. It represents valor. So in order to break the taboo, you can't just avoid it. You can't just set it aside and not talk about something. In order to break a taboo, you need to address it and confront it head on. So I wrote a small article just explaining why I like the swastika and why I think the swastika is a magnificent symbol and needs to be venerated and honored because of the great accomplishments that the German people did under Hitler, under the swastika. So I think a lot of people are waking up to the fact that Hitler was not a bad guy, that Hitler was trying to save his country and free his country from Jewish domination. So, you know, if people want to say that it's gonna turn newcomers away, maybe it will. But the information that I have on my site is so rock solid, it's so backed up by facts, that a symbol is not going to change that. It's not going to change the truth that I'm speaking.
Correct. And people really do need to be made aware of the truth and even the truth behind the swastika. So I'm really kind of glad that you have it there. I don't object to it in the least little bit. One of the articles that you recently did May 19th, it's posted May 19th, is about Arthur Topham, who was arrested in what you call Communist Canada.
Yeah, this is incredible. Arthur Topham is a Canadian patriot. He runs a website called radicalpress.com, and the Jews in Canada seem to have been harassing him for several years. They originally tried to get him charged with a hate speech for some of the stuff he posts on his website, but since that didn't fall through, they have resorted to Jewish communist police state tactics and have recently arrested him. The RCMP, which is like the Jews' own secret police in Canada, it appears, have raided his house, have confiscated all of his computer files, and put him in handcuffs and took him away to jail. He has been released, I have heard, though, but he's not allowed to send emails. He's basically under house arrest, and he's being charged, apparently, with, quote, commission for hate crimes, which is, like, very confusing. What does that even mean? It's really swindle speak for criticizing the Jews, because that's all this man ever did, was he criticized Jews and their malfeasance in the world. So that is a crime, apparently, in Canada to criticize Jews. But for people who want to support Arthur, he needs donations because they have ruined his ability to find employment, just like they do with anyone who speaks against Jews. They have a hard time getting money coming their way. So if you want to donate to Arthur Topham, the people who are listening to this, you can send your donation to Arthur Topham, that's ArthurTopham, 4633 Barkerville Highway, Quesnel, British Columbia, Canada, that's Quesnel, and postal code V2J6TA. And I think Arthur's a guy who needs to be supported. He spoke the truth. He was on point on all of the topics, including Hitler and National Socialism. So I hope people help this guy out.
Right. And you can get that address again at ZionCrimeFactory.com and just scroll down. And please do consider sending him some money. I'm sure he would appreciate it. Now, does he take checks? What do you recommend here?
Yeah, I'm sure he takes pretty much anything, money orders, checks.
Okay.
I'm hoping that this charge doesn't stick because, first of all, they tried to get him under hate speech for his website, but it didn't work. It didn't fall through because there was some other case where the judge ruled in favor of a guy named Mark Lemire. And so the law apparently was on the shelf, so they couldn't get him for hate speech. So how are they going to charge him for this? It doesn't make any sense. If they couldn't get him originally under hate speech, what are they going to charge him for now? So this seems like a totally illegal, just desperate attempt to silence this man. This is probably not even going to stick, these charges on him. So I'm waiting to see more information. There hasn't been very much information released about him, but I 100% support him. He's a patriot. He's a truth speaker. He told the truth about international Jewry, and that's the only reason that somebody like this would be persecuted is because he spoke the truth. And this in itself, just the fact that this man's arrested and so many other people have been arrested, like Brendan O'Connell in Australia, other people in Canada, people in Europe have been arrested for questioning the Holocaust or criticizing Jews. Now, we have these fools in the Patriot movement who claim that the New World Order is run by everything from Freemasons to Jesuits to the Vatican to reptilian space aliens. If any of these groups had any power or influence, then why is the only people who seem to be getting silenced and suppressed are people who criticize the Jews? That proves in itself that the Jews are ruling, the ruling elite in the world today.
Right. Now, while they might belong to some of those organizations, such as the Freemasons or whatever, basically right, they are the power behind a lot of organizations. And in Canada, there seem to be two people, members of B'nai B'rith, excuse me, Richard Warman and Harry Abrams, who are really the, what you call them, the professional denunciators of anybody who speaks out.
B'nai B'rith is the main international Jewish organization that is behind the suppression of free speech. The Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith is the main group in America pushing for laws against freedom of speech. In every country in the world, in fact, that there's a sizable Jewish community, they're the leading element against freedom of speech, freedom of expression. Why is that? Is that because they have nothing to hide? No, people who want to suppress your speech have something to hide. They need to put down criticism of their criminal activity, because if people are continually talking about them, and speaking does do, it does have an effect. Just saying things does have an effect, and they're worried about it. That's why they need these hate speech laws to suppress their criminal conspiracy that they are engaged in.
Exactly. You know, I was reading about a story, excuse me, that occurred in Colorado, and it's a lesbian couple decided that they would deface their garage, the garage door, and they wrote, "Kill the gay." And then they called the police and reported it as a hate crime and said that their neighbors had been, you know, persecuting them. And come to find out, it was the two people who did this themselves, and now they are under arrest. And when you look at the Russian pogroms and any of the other so-called persecutions or activities directed at the Jews, you have to ask, okay, are they doing this to themselves in order to bring you know, attention to the supposed persecution? Are they in fact doing it themselves? And there have been
right.
other cases where people, Jews, have participated in these kinds of activities, and then they've been found out. And so it makes me question, okay, how many things have they, you know, participated in? How many things have they done themselves? Just
right.
to say, oh, look how we're hated. Look, oh, what victims we are.
In fact, most times that you see something like that, especially that gets promoted on television about a hate crime against Jews, a lot of the time it turns out that the Jews themselves are doing it. They paint swastikas on their own synagogues. They've been caught doing that. They do hate crimes against themselves because they want to perpetuate the myth that they're persecuted. They're not persecuted. They're the most rich and powerful ethnic minority group in the entire world. How are they persecuted? They're running our nations. They're controlling our banks. They're controlling our media. These people are not persecuted. They have, in fact, persecuted Gentile people all over the world, especially under Bolshevism in Russia, which was a Jewish invention. The Jews decided that they needed a system of government to suppress Gentiles completely from day one. And the first law that Vladimir Lenin put in place in Russia was making anti-Semitism a crime that was punishable by death. That's not an exaggeration. He said that anyone who was engaging in anti-Semitism, quote unquote, which we should really call criticism of Jews, legitimate criticism of Jews, was, quote, counter-revolutionary. So what he's saying is that he's admitting that it is counter-revolutionary, or that if it's counter-revolutionary to criticize Jews, then all the revolutionaries must be Jewish. So he's confessed that Judaism is behind communism, and he was Jewish himself. So, yeah, the hate crime thing, they do tend to do that to themselves in order to make it look like they're hated, they're persecuted, when in fact they are the greatest haters in the world. They are the greatest persecutors of Gentiles in the world. If you just take a look at Nazi Germany made, let's say, 3 or 4 anti-Jewish films. If you can compare and contrast that to Jewish Hollywood, how many films has Jewish Hollywood made bashing, slandering, vilifying, demonizing, attacking Hitler and the Nazis and demonizing the German people? Hundreds, possibly even thousands. So the Nazis make 3 films against Jews using facts to expose Jewish criminality, and the Jews have made hundreds, if not thousands, of films based on lying propaganda, deception and deceit, no facts, pure fiction, fantasy Hollywood against Hitler and the Nazis in order to demonize their enemies, in order to convince the world that we all have to loathe and hate the people that stand against the Jews. So if you read their holy books, if you read their Talmud, if you just listen to their own statements, they are the greatest haters of Gentiles. They think Gentiles are cattle, are worthless slaves to serve them. This is elucidated in the Old Testament. It's elucidated in the Talmud, which says the best of the Gentiles should be killed. It says in the Old Testament that us Gentiles will stand and feed their flocks and be their plowmen, be their vine dressers, that we will bow down and lick the dust off of their feet. A chief rabbi in Israel named Ovadia Yosef, he recently came out and said in a sermon that Gentiles only exist to serve Jews as slaves, and then he compared us to donkeys. So it is pretty clear who the haters are, who the persecutors are, who the oppressors are. It's not Gentiles. It is the Jewish power elite.
Exactly. And speaking of films put out by Germans, I rewatched a film yesterday called The Eternal Jew. And I watched it clear through. And at the end, they gave a demonstration, or they showed how the Jews slaughter animals. It's called a kosher slaughter. And they basically slit their throat, and sometimes they hobble them so they can't move, and sometimes they don't. But they slit their throat and literally allow them to bleed to death. And the animal, of course, suffers tremendously.
It's absolutely horrible. Absolutely disgusting.
And one of the first laws Germany introduced after Hitler came in was the prohibition against this type of slaughter.
And what an evil tyrant. He wants to protect animals from cruel suffering and getting their throats cut. That's just one point to prove that Hitler was no evil tyrant. A tyrant doesn't care about animals.
Well, you know, when I saw that just recently, in fact, I've interviewed this doctor and this other individual maybe three or four times. Dr. Paul Byrne talks about organ trafficking. And when a person goes into the hospital with maybe a head injury or something, they immediately set that person up to harvest their organs, particularly if they have signed up to be a donor on their driver's license. And now, of course, you can sign up on Facebook, thanks to Zuckerman, who now has signed up maybe 90,000 people on Facebook to be organ donors. But the fact is that an organ donor has to be alive in order to have those organs be viable for transferring to another body. And what they do, they do not use any anesthetic. They actually paralyze the person who they plan to harvest the organs from. And the person can feel every single knife cut. They can feel everything, but they are unable to move or to say anything. And when I saw that cow have his throat slit, I thought, my gosh, that's what they're doing to these organ donors. They're basically treating them like cattle and harvesting their organs while they are alive.
That's absolutely horrific and disgusting. And that just shows the level of depravity that our world has sunk to, where they're using humans to harvest organs. That reminds me of the story that came out about the Israelis who were using Palestinians, stealing their organs and using it on a black market organ trafficking ring. And then there's a bunch of rabbis in New Jersey who were rounded up and arrested for organ trafficking, which is another one of these international Jewish gangster operations. They do drug trafficking, organ trafficking, weapons trafficking, any imaginable nefarious operation you could find Jews engaging in.
Exactly. And they view us basically as nothing more than animals, cattle, and we're at their disposal.
Oh, even less than animals. Worse than animals, because we can get in their way. We could try to stop them. So they have to suppress us in even more cruel and disgusting and destructive tactics than they would even use against animals. They drop depleted uranium bombs on the enemies of Israel.
Oh, yes. Yes. And of course, the U.S. military, the officers, officials don't tell the recruits that this is what is going to happen to them. They go over and function as cannon slaughter in the Middle East, and then they come back and are told by the Veterans Administration not to think of having children because they might just have a child that is horribly deformed. You know, that's you know, these people, young people, who maybe can't get a job or have other circumstances, they don't tell these recruits what they're in for. That's uninformed consent. And yet, you know, they could, you know, lose their life or and they're fighting for Israel. They're not fighting for freedom for this country. I mean, that is ridiculous.
They're fighting for the Jew world order, not only for Israel, but for a global Jewish imperium. The Second World War was the worst and most catastrophic war in the world that's ever taken place in history, and it was a Jewish war for Jewish interest, for the establishment of a Jewish domination, international domination over the world. This was openly professed by even British officials. I think I've said on your show a few times before that there was this article called New World Order Pledge to Jews. It was released in the New York Times, and it said that a top British official named Arthur Greenwood pledged the Jews to help them create a new world order at the end of the war upon the victory of the Allies, and that he would help the Jews establish world domination. He didn't say it in so many terms, so many words, but that's what he meant by it, to help the Jews take over the planet. And they have, and they've used the Holocaust to psychologically enslave the Gentile world and turn us into these slumbering zombies, these fools who cannot think for ourselves. We're bowing down to Jewish power based on a ridiculous, preposterous, and absurd fairy tale that could not have possibly scientifically ever occurred in a million years. And I'm speaking about the so-called Holocaust. It's impossible. It couldn't have happened. It's been destroyed and demolished by the Holocaust revisionists, who are the most persecuted and oppressed and suppressed people, political activists, scholars, and writers in the world, in the entire world.
Oh, how true. Now, you've written a very, very lengthy article entitled The Jew World Order Unmasked. And you mentioned yesterday that you anticipated that, or you were working on a revision of this article. So you want to tell us about that?
No, I wasn't working on revision of that particular essay. I'm working on a revision of my...
Oh, the 9/11. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
The 9/11, the Israel did 9/11 article that I put together a few years ago. But I decided it wasn't really up to par with my current level of scholarship. There's a lot of information that I could add to it. I could make it sound a lot better. I'm a better writer than I was a couple of years ago. I've improved over the years just from writing so many articles. So I'm going to revise that. I'm going to write an entire new essay on it. It's going to be even bigger than the Jew World Order Unmasked piece, which was about 51 pages. It's not too long. I don't know how – I think your books are quite lengthy, like 400 pages or something.
No, they're actually – the first one is 700, and the second one is going to be just a little bit bigger.
By the way, congratulations on the second book. It recently was just published, right?
No, it's I'm actually going through the final edit right now. It was supposed to have come out, the end of April, but it's just taken a little bit longer. It took a little bit longer for the editor to go through it. And in fact, it was taking so long, I thought maybe they turned it over to the ADL or something. But they finally, they finally released it to me. And so that's what I'm working on.
I look forward to reading that. It should be very good.
Thank you. Okay, so you were, 10 when 9/11 happened?
Yeah, I was probably like 11, 10, 11.
So it just, and that day, That very day, as you watched it on TV, we were all mesmerized by the TV, all these things we were seeing, the repetitive scenes. I mean, it was actually a psychological operation in play.
Absolutely. In fact, the first thing I remember on that day was coming home from school, and I saw on the television they were showing us a video of Palestinians supposedly celebrating in the West Bank. This video turned out to be completely fraudulent. It was taken somewhere else. In fact, you can see behind the camera, there's these people handing out candies and telling people to celebrate. It was totally a staged, manipulated video that was put on all of the major networks. Every single major American media network was playing this anti-Palestinian video, trying to make Palestinians look like they're supporters of terrorism, when in fact, the first people arrested on 9/11 in connection to the attacks were not Muslims with links to Al-Qaeda, but Israelis with ties to the Mossad. The first people arrested were five Israeli intelligence agents who were caught dancing and celebrating and videotaping the 9/11 attacks from several places in New Jersey. And the media completely ignored this story, completely whitewashed it, covered it up, and used that Palestinian dancing Palestinian video to draw attention away and put the blame on their enemies and demonize their enemies, the Palestinians. So the five dancing Israelis is a was pretty much the window into the who was really behind the 9/11 attacks, because they had their cameras set up, some say before the first plane hit, even if they had it after the first plane hit, it doesn't really matter, because the dancing Israelis were celebrating the attacks before the second plane hit the tower. Now, when the first plane hit the tower, most people, most innocent bystanders, thought that it was just a terrible accident, or a plane crash. They didn't know that it was a terrorist attack until the second plane came in. So these Israelis, when the first plane hit, they were already celebrating. They're already slapping high fives, jumping up and down. So that proves that they immediately were cognizant that this was a terrorist attack and not an accidental plane crash, unless you think they would be celebrating a plane crash. Who in their right mind would celebrate a plane crash unless they're completely insane? But this shows that they knew the attack was going to happen. They were in on it because they were celebrating. They knew that this thing was going to be blamed on their enemies, the Arabs. The first thing that came out of the mouth of the driver of the van that was pulled over after the dancing Israelis were pulled over, he said, "We're Israelis. We're not your problem. The Palestinians are the problem." And another event that happened on the day was there was a truck or a van that was stopped approaching the George Washington Bridge, and it was packed with explosives. This was reported on the mainstream media. And just before that truck bomb was stopped, there was two calls that were put into the NYPD by Jewish Tsayanim agents, and they claimed to have witnessed, quote, Palestinians making a bomb in a van headed towards the Holland Tunnel, they said. But the bomb was actually headed towards the George Washington Bridge. So it was a misdirection play. They tried to pre-frame their Palestinian enemies and send the cops to the Holland Tunnel, and then they would have blown up the George Washington Bridge, and then all they would be left with was this NYPD phone call saying they saw Palestinians mixing the bomb in the van. So two attempts to blame Palestinians. Then they are showing us the dancing Palestinians video to take attention away from the dancing Israelis incident and the Israelis who were caught trying to blow up the George Washington Bridge. And of course, they tie back to Urban Moving Systems, which was the Israeli intelligence front company that was stationed in New Jersey, which was owned by a guy named Dominic Sutter, and he was an Israeli Mossad agent, most likely. He fled the country, fled the United States back to Israel some 3 days after the attacks. Now, if he has nothing to hide, why would he be so afraid to speak with the FBI and divulge information?
Now, that was during the time that nobody was allowed to fly. I mean, there were people stuck in various places in the country on vacation and were not allowed to go home. And yet, we have Israelis who are allowed to fly out of the country with no problem.
Apparently, they have special privileges because they're the chosen ones, so they get to do that. They get to try to blow up a bridge and nobody says anything about it. Nobody cares. Nobody tries investigates it. Nobody tries to arrest these people and charge them with terrorism. They get to go home to Israel and live their lavish lifestyles after pulling off the greatest false flag attack that has ever occurred in the history of the world.
Now, it said in the Haaretz newspaper over there that they were actually sent here just to document the event.
The dancing Israelis, yeah, that they were. One of them went on Israeli television and said they were there to document the event. Now they don't admit that they were there to do that. They claim that they were just movers working for a moving company. A total front fake alibi. They were Israeli intelligence. The FBI confirmed that at least two of them were registered agents of the Mossad. Now, if they were just movers, why the hell were they celebrating the attacks? They were celebrating the attacks because this was the greatest Israeli spy operation conducted in history, where Israel attacks America and drags the United States into wars against several of their enemies in the Middle East, who they had long sought to weaken and destroy: Iraq, Afghanistan, and then leading to other wars, more broader war against the entire Arab and Muslim world. Really, the point of 9/11 was to instigate a clash of civilizations between the West and the Islamic Middle East for the benefit of Israel and international Zionism. This is so blatantly obvious within an hour of the attacks. Ehud Barak, who's now the Israeli defense minister, I think back then he's always been a high-level member of the Israeli military and government. And within an hour of the attack, he was on the BBC live broadcast saying, one, he tried to say that Osama bin Laden had done it within an hour of the attack, which is how could he possibly know that? Two, he called for an international war against terrorism. So not only him, though, there was Ariel Sharon. He was the prime minister of Israel at the time. He was on CNN giving a press conference calling for a global war against terror. Now, that term was coined by Benjamin Netanyahu, excuse me, in the 80s, where he writes this book called Terrorism: How the West Can Win, in which he says that the West needs to engage in a long, protracted war against anyone that the Jews deem to be terrorists. So if the Jews are saying this group is a terrorist, the United States must go and attack them. And Ehud Barak and Richard Perle, who's like this big Jewish neocon kingpin in the US, they were on BBC later on in the day on 9/11, in which they call for wars against Iraq, Syria, Libya, Afghanistan, Hezbollah, Hamas, and Iran. Pretty much all of the enemies of Israel and international Jewry are being put on the chopping block to be destroyed by the American Empire as the proxy force, the stooge puppet army of international Jewry, as we saw in the Second World War. Now, this is pretty much a continuation of that.
Right. Now, this brings us to the point of this law that was recently passed. In fact, it was passed on May 9th, and it's called the United States-Israel Enhanced Security Cooperation Act of 2012, and to assist in the defense of Israel and for other purposes. And AIPAC apparently assisted in the drafting of this bill. And it was passed in the House 411-2 with hardly any debate.
Well, there's never any debate because the House is and the Congress and the Senate and the White House and the Pentagon are completely and 100% under the control of the Jewish lobby in the United States, AIPAC, ADL, Zionist Organization, American Jewish Committee, on and on and on. There's like hundreds of Jewish organizations, then you have to take into account the rich Jewish billionaires like Haim Saban, George Soros, and others who finance all these puppet politicians, who give them campaign donations to control their foreign policy, domestic policy, what have you, in conjunction to the Jews actually inside the government. So you got the lobby, you got the rich Jewish billionaires pulling people's strings, and then there's the Jews inside the government, and there's plenty of them all over the top level positions in the White House, Pentagon, Congress, and so on. So when you take those forces together, you have this pretty much a lockdown on the entire American political system. So whatever the Jews want, they get. They just have to simply say what they want, and these puppet politicians, it's almost like they're on strings. They just do what they're told. They have no independent insight into these policies, into these laws. These are Jewish laws, Talmudic laws, put in place for the benefit of Jews. Nobody seems to be benefiting from these laws other than Israel and the Jewish community in the U.S.
Right. Now, and I totally agree with you. And it's very interesting. I mean, they've been using the same tactics for so long, you would think that the American public would become aware of these. And when you mentioned the photos, the video of the dancing Palestinians, after the sinking of the Lusitania in 1915, they showed what they purported were a bunch of Germans who were celebrating over the loss of American lives on that ship. I believe there was 128 Americans were on that ship that lost their lives. And so the media in this country were showing Germans who were celebrating that event, which, of course, they weren't. This was taken at another time.
That's their age-old tactic, their age-old manipulative way to demonize their enemies is just to make it look like their enemies are doing what the Jews are doing. The Jews were celebrating on 9/11, five dancing Israelis. Benjamin Netanyahu said that 9/11 was, quote, good for Israel. And he later went on to say that it, quote, swung American public opinion in our favor, as in Israel's favor. So they're dancing and celebrating, jumping for joy, making positive statements in reference to 9/11, admitting that they benefited tremendously from the attacks. Nobody else did. The only people who benefited was Israel. And at the same time, they're using their control, their death grip over the mass media, which is the most powerful tool they have because people get all of their information from the television. So as they're doing this, as they're mocking their victims, they are showing us phony and fake Palestinian videos making it look like they support terrorism when the Israelis have been committing terrorism against the Palestinians for 60-some-odd years and continue to do so. They blew up the King David Hotel in 1946, the IRGUN, the Jewish terrorist organization, and they guess what happened when they blew up the King David Hotel? They were dressed up like Arabs.
Yes.
In 1954, Israeli agents blew up American and British targets in Egypt and tried to blame it on the Egyptians in what's called the Levant Affair. In 1967, the Israelis attacked the USS Liberty, an American surveillance ship, slaughtering 34 American sailors, wounding 170 others. In fact, they were probably trying to kill all the members on board. It wasn't successful, though, but if they had been successful, they would have blamed that on Egypt and drawn America into the Six-Day War with them on their side. So, by way of deception, thou shalt do war is the motto of the Israeli Mossad. The most treacherous terrorist organization on the earth today is the Israeli Mossad, who has carried out false flag attacks all over the planet and has blamed it on their enemies. And the reason that they're so successful at this is because they have control of the media. The media is essential to a false flag operation because you need the media to immediately disseminate the pre-scripted propaganda that will blame the attack on those, on the enemies of those actually committing the atrocity. It's Andreas von Bülow, former German politician said that the main motivation of people who commit false flag operations is to shift the public opinion of the population being attacked in a direction favorable to their political objectives. So on 9/11, who was blamed for the attack? Arabs, the enemies of Israel. So and they've launched since 9/11, the Jewish-owned media has launched a vicious campaign of nonstop vilification and demonization of Arabs, Muslims. It's like a similar course to that taken of the Germans and the Nazis, who have been so demonized in the media. Any enemy of Jewry seems to be painted as evil. That in itself should tell you who controls the media. Why is our media constantly telling us that those who stand up to Jewish domination in the world are evil and we need to go and attack them and destroy them and annihilate their people? So this needs to be totally exposed because they have engaged in this so many times in the past, and they'll continue to do it if people are blind to it, if people don't understand what actually happened.
And exactly, I mean, if you just use your head, people would have to understand that who but Israel would have so much influence in America that they could have the U.S. military, which is the most powerful military in the entire world. Who but Israel would be able to have the influence to make them stand down and not respond?
Nobody other than Israel, nobody other than the American Jewry, the most powerful Jewish community in the world is American Jewry, who has a lock dead grip on the media, the banks, and the government of the US. Without them, Israel wouldn't get any support. There'd be no reason to support Israel. Israel doesn't have any benefit to be supporting them. What do they give the United States? Nothing. They spy on the US. Jonathan Pollard, the guy who stole more US secrets than any other spy, was Jewish and he was passing secrets to Israel. They sell those secrets to China, Russia. So they're a treacherous nation. They're a nation of bandits, criminals, terrorists, murderers. Adolf Hitler called them a future Israel. He said that if the Zionists got their quote state in Palestine, that it would just be sort of a haven or a hub for the international Jewish world swindle, and there would be an organization, a hub for or a university for budding crooks, is what he said in Mein Kampf. So that's exactly what it is. It is a international gangster state.
Right. And it's very interesting the way that they portrayed Pollard as I believe they called him a Catholic, that he was, they didn't say he was Jewish.
Well, they always do that. They want to pass off their treachery on Gentiles. Gentiles must take the blame for every Jewish misconduct, must be blamed on Gentiles. That's why I tell people just throw your television out the window. You don't get any good information from it. You're just basically looking at the world through a Jewish lens if you turn on the television, because it's an entity that serves the Jewish power elite, and that's it.
Right, and that goes for the entertainment factor on TV also, because if you whether you're watching a movie, which is not valueless entertainment, it is there's always a message of some sort in anything that you happen to watch on TV.
Hollywood, I think I said on your show before, is a Jewish colony. It is founded by Jews for Jews. We get Holocaust propaganda movies at least two or three every year, something to that effect. It's a despicable industry. It's depraved. They push drugs. They push sex and all kinds of degenerate behavior and make it seem as if it's cool. It is a horrid, horrid entity that people should stop supporting by refusing to pay for these movies that they put out. So, yeah, I mean, Hollywood needs to be dismantled. It is the main propaganda tool being used to disseminate Holocaust propaganda.
Yes, and yet people pay for their own indoctrination by going to these high-priced movies.
That is the sad thing about it. People are actually paying their oppressors and slave masters.
Amazing. Now, do you remember the story about the Nade brothers who were ju they just happened to be in the only place, the only street in which they could watch and film. They were supposed to be filming the operations of a fire department in New York, and they actually filmed the plane going into the first tower, I believe.
Yeah, I've seen their documentary. I remember in high school being shown that film. Yeah, very odd that they happened to be there at the exact time that the first plane came in. I don't know exactly, what their deal was. Some have said that they were French intelligence. Maybe they were. I mean, French intelligence is a puppet of Mossad, is a puppet of Israeli intelligence, infiltrated 100% by Israeli intelligence. And France is one of the most oppressive countries against Holocaust revisionists. People who speak against Jews are arrested immediately in France. It is a Jewish entity.
Right. So do you think that maybe this was just sort of a backup crew to kind of collaborate with the five dancing Israelis? What do you think?
Perhaps I'm not too sure exactly what their deal was. The five dancing Israelis is the evidence of their involvement is so blatantly obvious, so I would probably focus on that. But it's possible. I haven't looked into it too much and too or into their history too much. I don't know much about these guys.
Right. Or, and well, I totally believe that the whole so-called 9/11 truth movement has been infiltrated in order so that it won't go anywhere or move forward in any way, shape, or form. And it could be that the Nade brothers were somehow, people were supposed to associate them with some faction of the U.S. government to take the focus off of Israel. So, I mean, I think that you have to look at,
That's true. Yeah, the 9/11 truth movement is Jewish controlled because the films that have been promoted on the mainstream media, the mainstream Jewish media, have been Loose Change, Alex Jones. These guys get attention from the mainstream media. If they're really saying something that hurt the establishment, why are they being allowed to speak their opinion on the mass media? Are people who criticize Jews allowed on the mass media? Absolutely not. They are suppressed and thrown in prison and vilified. But Alex Jones and his Loose Change cabal tried to control the dissent. They tried to put all of the blame on the U.S. government when the U.S. government is a Jewish-controlled entity, is an Israeli puppet. And they don't mention that. They don't mention any of the Israeli connections in their film. They don't talk about Larry Silverstein, Frank Lowy, Lauder, and all the other Jewish billionaires who owned and controlled the World Trade Center, consolidated power, and took it out of the public sector. The World Trade Center was first owned by the Port Authority, and then 6 weeks before the attacks, these Jewish billionaires buy the entire complex. Put it under their private control, and in my opinion, use this control to allow Israeli intelligence agents, explosive experts, to line the towers with explosives and blow them up. Building 7 was clearly demolished with explosives. You can see squibs shooting out of the towers as they come down at nearly free fall speed. You can hear explosions in videos. You have witnesses reporting explosions underneath them in the basement. So, who could have put the explosives in the towers? The only logical conclusion is that the Israelis, working for the Urban Moving Systems, used those vans to transport the explosives into the basements and possibly up. It's speculation. Nobody can know for sure how exactly they got those explosives in the towers. Only the people who did it know. But the Israelis had the means, they had the motive, they had the opportunity, they had the control of the mass media to be able to cover up the crime and put the blame on their enemy.
and they had the influence over the American government with people like Michael Chertoff running pretty much the entire Homeland Security apparatus. He was the chief of the Justice Department or the Criminal Division of the Justice Department when 9/11 happened. He's an Israeli dual citizen. His mother was a Mossad agent. He's Talmudic Jew. His grandfather was a rabbi. So this is the guy that was running the so-called investigation into 9/11. The cover-up was Michael Chertoff, the guy who was running the 9/11 commission report that gave us the fraudulent, phony story of 19 suicidal Muslims, was Philip Zelikow, a Zionist Jew. So at every level of the planning, execution, and the cover-up of the attacks, you see Jews standing in the foreground. The Israeli intelligence founder, whose name was Iser Harel, he predicted 9/11 in 1979. He told this Christian Zionist who went to his house, he said, Islamic terrorists, in Islamic theology, they have this fascination with the phallic symbol. And the first attack on America will take place in New York City on your tallest building. That's the phallic symbol that these Islamic terrorists will hit. Now, to decipher that quote prediction, he said that the phallic symbol is important as Islamic theology. That's not true. The phallic symbol is important in Freemasonic ideology, and Freemasonry is Jewish at its root, at its foundation. It's based on the rites and rituals of Judaism. So he's trying to deceive you. He's trying to pre-frame the Muslims for this Israeli attack on 9/11. And Jews seem to have this innate ability to predict the future. They've made statements predicting World War I, the Hall of Hoax. They were constantly invoking the 6 million myth from 1900 onwards. They were saying 6 million Jews are going to die in the Holocaust, are going to perish, are being persecuted, and they kept pumping this story out in the media before First World War, during the First World War, after the First World War, and then they finally got it institutionalized after the Second World War in order to establish the State of Israel and then launch these litany of crimes since then. It's just unending amount of malfeasance, criminality, destructiveness coming from this one closely knit community.
Right. You know, it's interesting that former U.S. Senator Bob Kerry, that's K-E-R-R-E-Y, admitted to a gentleman, and I have it on tape, that 9/11 was a 30-year conspiracy. And so if you figure going back to when the towers were finished, one of them, I believe, was finished in 71, and the other one was finished in 72, which would make it just about 30 years. And so you have to think, well, why were these towers built to begin with? Because they certainly were never actually fully rented. And it's just a very interesting situation when you look at the construction of the towers, the asbestos, and, you know, the asbestos lawsuit, and the fact that, they were under the control of the Port Authority, which was run by Louis M. Eisenberg, who was the chairman of that authority. And you know, I mean, it's just when you put all of this together, and the fact that Silverstein actually leased the buildings, and he leased them, I think the lease began in July, he really didn't put any money down, but then he ran right out and got himself an insurance policy that would pay if there were a terrorist attack. And so he collected millions and millions of dollars. And
billions.
Yeah, I think it was like, I don't know.
$4.5 billion, I believe.
Yeah.
Larry Silverstein is, yeah, one of the key guys involved in 9/11. He's personal friends with Benjamin Netanyahu. He spoke on the phone with Benjamin Netanyahu, the guy who coined the phrase war on terror, the guy who said 9/11 is a good thing for Israel and would swing American public opinion in their favor. He's talking on the phone with Larry Silverstein every Sunday, which was a revealed in Haaretz newspaper. So Silverstein is like an ultra-Zionist, Israel-firster. He has intimate connections to Israel, Israeli intelligence, and the guy who pushed for the World Trade Center complex to be privatized was Ronald Lauder, another Jewish billionaire who owns the Lauder cosmetics industry. He was part of the this New York Commission on Privatization, Governor George Pataki's Commission on Privatization, and he pushed for the World Trade Center to be bought by a private owner, Larry Silverstein. And he is connected to Israel as well. He has a school in Israel named after him called the Lauder School of Government Diplomacy and Strategy, which is a Mossad training school. So almost every, in fact, every single individual involved in privatizing the World Trade Center, owning the World Trade Center, and the lease of it was Jewish, a Zionist, connected to Israel, friends with Israeli prime ministers. You know, I connect all of these dots in my upcoming essay, and the picture is so plain and so clear that Israelis and the Jewish Zionist network planned 9/11, carried out 9/11, and covered up 9/11.
Wow. Well, that is certainly the case. It's pretty obvious, and I just cannot imagine why people are still blaming the Arabs. It's just amazing to me. And I just, I talk to a lot of people and, they're just brain dead. And I can't, yeah. It's because they've never looked at it or what. It's just amazing that that people don't sit back and just put two and two together that we are over there bombing Arabs. We are bombing the people who the Israelis want to get rid of. And of course, they have skewed the whole Palestinian issue so that it looks like the Palestinians are the bad guys. It is just amazing.
People don't think. They just watch television. They like to be entertained. That's when they go to watch Hollywood movies to get their entertainment fix. Nobody really cares. They kind of have a very selfish view where they're only thinking about themselves, what they got to do. In the now, and instead of researching history, finding out what happened in these major historical events. So, yeah, it's very difficult to try to get people on board with this. In fact, it's even hard to get people who do seem to accept truth on some subjects, but then they deny others. Like, there are some Holocaust revisionists who accept the official story of 9/11, oddly enough. So they
it's so amazing to me.
Yeah, they see through the Jewish propaganda on the Holocaust, and they are aware of the Jewish control of the media, but then they believe entirely the Jewish media's version of 9/11. It's very odd, and it's very strange. Why would somebody be that ignorant?
I think there are specialists in the truth movement. They specialize in one thing, and they just never go beyond that one thing. And it's wonderful to be a scholar in a particular science or on a particular subject. But I think you have to have you're actually having tunnel vision. And yeah. I really like to have a full view. I know people who still believe in the moon landing, for Pete's sake. When it's. It's another thing.
I'd like to cover a broad array of topics, mainly on the Jewish question, but there's so many different aspects of the Jewish question, so many different historical conspiracies. So I like to cover all of them. I don't just like to focus specifically just on the Holocaust 24/7, specifically just on 9/11 24/7. I like to cover all of them because the truth needs to get out about all of these things simultaneously if we are to bring down the Jew world order, in my opinion.
Yes, I agree with you completely. And when you look at their hand behind so many of these tragic things that are occurring in America, and you find them behind every so-called conspiracy, behind every horrible thing.
Yep. JFK assassination, too.
Yeah.
They were behind that, too. They were behind every major political conspiracy that I've looked into myself. I find the Jewish hand predominates, is the leading hand, is the main beneficiary of all of these political events and historical events. So we need to tie them all together. We can't just focus on one of them because people won't get the big picture. If you just focus specifically on the JFK assassination all the time, then people won't understand 9/11, which is a lot more relevant today than the JFK assassination.
Right. I agree. Well, we've just about run out of our hour here. This has been just very interesting, and I really appreciate you being on our little private program here. And I invite people to put this on YouTube or to share it with your friends. Of course, I will send you the audio, and you can put it on your website. Now, you have some very interesting things on your website. You have a lot of things that people can download. You have some book files, PDF files, all kinds of things. Tell us just a little bit about the website.
Well, my website is basically just all of my work and research articles, videos, and other people's books and stuff that I think are good that I promote. And I put it all on one site where people can go to learn about pretty much anything they want. I focus almost entirely 100% on the Jewish question because I think it's just the most important issue affecting the world today, and it needs to be exposed and needs to be the focus of everybody's attention. So yeah, the website is zioncrimefactory.com. There's a few other good sites that people should go to. A friend of mine, Mike Delaney, runs a site called prothink.org. He also is a director and producer of a documentary called 9/11 Missing Links, which goes into all the Israeli and Jewish connections, which can be watched for free at 911missinglinks.com. He has another website called prothink.tv featuring banned videos that YouTube has banned from their website.
Wow, there must be thousands.
Yeah, there's quite a few. And there's another site that I want to plug called jewishproblem.com. So there's quite a few sites popping up that are hitting on the same issues that I talk about, which is encouraging to see.
That is great. Well, thank you so very much, ZCF, which stands for Zion a Crime Factory. I hope to do this again soon so we can have a whole series of these audio files to share and just disseminate throughout with all of our friends and with anybody that will listen, basically. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Deanna. It's been a pleasure and an honor to speak with you once again.
All righty. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.